You're listening to the Prepper Recon Podcast. For questions, comments, and podcast archives, go to PrepperRecon.com. I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out JMBullion.com today. Today's guest is Sergeant Tim of Outlaw Patriot News. Sergeant Tim, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you so much, Mark, for having me back on. I'm just so blessed to have platforms like yours that give me a chance to get on and get information out to God's people and try to really educate them on what's going on in the world. So thank you so much for having me back on, Mark.
Oh, well, absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you on. And let me tell you, the world is a dangerous place, and I think it's getting more so every day. You're connected with the intelligence community. What's your take on WannaCry?
Well, I have kind of a different take than I think we have seen in a lot of the media. One of the things that I would point out to people is that it affects the Windows XP operating system. I know that there's a lot of people, especially computer enthusiasts, whether you want to call them hackers or gamers or whatever the case may be, but there's a lot of people that are computer enthusiasts who still run Windows XP because of the fact there's a lot of tools in it that aren't available in later builds of the Windows operating system. But the fact of the matter is, it's still a system that was developed in 2001. So it's been out there for a long time for people to find exploits in. And Microsoft itself stopped supporting updates for it in 2014. Now, when the Shadow Brokers came out and released some of these exploits and some of these tools that in media reports, some of this WannaCry code is based off of, Microsoft did come in March of this year and released a security patch that supposedly would have protected these systems from that. So I know I have a little bit different opinion than many people that have been looking at this. I think that we have some shared responsibility in what happened. Definitely the people who actually released this out have a ton of responsibility. The people who actually took the exploit, created the ransomware, and put it out there, they have the most responsibility in what happened. But I think the shadow brokers themselves share a little bit of responsibility in the fact that they released this. I think that if it's true, it was pretty interesting that Microsoft came out and said, hey, if NSA knew about this exploit, why didn't they let us know? But the interesting part about that is Microsoft makes that statement while at the same time knowing that there's no way that the NSA will come out and confirm or deny whether or not they did let Microsoft know. And they won't even come out and confirm or deny if those are their actual tools. But in addition, I think that the companies and institutions that were affected, they have a little bit of responsibility in the fact that they're running, an operating system that is no longer supported by the manufacturer, and definitely their IT people. I have a friend who is kind of a white hat hacker. And one of the things that he has always told me is the greatest vulnerability in our networks is the fact that many of our IT professionals are just simply lazy. They make easy passwords to break. They don't update their networks like they should. And they name things in such a way that it's very easy to, once you're in their network, to discover where you need to go for the information that you want to get at. If Microsoft released the security update back in March, these IT professionals should have been on top of that, especially knowing that they're running an older system that's no longer fully supported They should have been on top of that. They should have downloaded that patch and got it on their network, because in my opinion, if you're running a system that's no longer supported and suddenly the manufacturer releases a security patch, that should give you a pretty good indicator that something has been developed that could possibly exploit your network.
And then Proofpoint published recently that there's a new virus or a worm or whatever you want to call it that's using one of the NSA exploits that were in that toolkit that were stolen and sold off or auctioned off by the shadow brokers. And it's called Edelcuz. What Edelcuz is it's just a cryptocurrency mining software that's mining Monero, which is sort of a similar to Bitcoin that's used on the darknet a lot, particularly Alphabay, which is used for a lot of drug sales and stolen credit card information and things of that nature. And Edelcuz is mining the cryptocurrency and then sending the Monero units back to the designers of the malware. And while it's not necessarily doing any harm to anybody's computer, it's stealing their processing speed and you know the capabilities of your computer. And and the big thing is that this is yet another thing in the same week as WannaCry that's using one of those NSA exploits. This was using the double pulsar exploit, which was a backdoor into Windows operating systems yet again. So when we see things like that, what responsibility does the NSA have to let Windows know that these tools, which tools were stolen and how they can be patched to stop something far, far worse than what we've seen so far?
Well, and definitely I do think the NSA does have some responsibility in alerting, whether it's an operating system manufacturer, whether it is a private network that perhaps they've detected some kind of activity, you know, malicious cyber activity on. I do think that they have a responsibility to help. They have not come out, to my knowledge, they have not come out and confirmed whether or not those tools that the shadow brokers put up are in fact NSA tools. I tend to believe that they probably are, and that's just my own personal belief. I do think that they have that responsibility, and definitely I think that's something, you know, legislation in Congress has not caught up. Cyber age, really. If you look at it, we just did up U.S. CyberCon, 2, maybe 3 years ago, kind of in response to the new cyber threat. But and so I think that overall, our nation's leaders are kind of behind the times, and some people will point at that as saying, well, we have a bunch of older generation people that are leading our country. Perhaps they don't understand cyber capabilities. That could play a role in it, but I think also just by its very nature, our government moves slow. But I think that one of the things that we as a nation need to look at as cyber capabilities continue to develop and continue to be deployed, not just in the criminal market, but across the military spectrum as well, we've got to get on top of that, and we've got to get in front of it. And considering the fact that NSA likely has a good deal of expertise and a good deal of knowledge on the cyber capabilities, perhaps they're an agency that should take the lead on it. I know that director of the NSA is kind of dual-hatted, is also the head of U.S. Cybercom, and I think that's probably a good thing that perhaps NSA is sharing their knowledge with Cybercom. But another aspect of this that I don't know that a lot of people are paying attention to this is the fact that over the last year, we've had several tech companies, Microsoft included, who have come out and made this push to kind of be borderless corporations, saying we no longer want to be restricted as, you know, an American company or a Chinese company or a Russian company. We produce products that are sold and used all over the world, and therefore, if there is cyber warfare, we should be considered neutral in that. That being the case, it makes for an interesting scenario if cyber warfare does begin to become a reality. Some people have claimed that, you know, the launches of these North Korean missiles that have gone awry are possibly the work of cyber implants inside the North Korean system. One of the things that disturbs me personally is the fact that Microsoft is coming in, they're building, I think they've completed three and they're building a fourth transparency center in China, and they're handing over the source code to Microsoft products to the Chinese. And in my mind, at least, that gives a huge vulnerability to the American side whenever you consider that the Chinese have that source code. They're able to go in and edit, look for exploits themselves and possibly use those against whether it be our government, whether it be criminal activity or whatever. You and I were talking just before we went on about the cyber software that you were referencing there, Edelkuz. And I think that it's interesting that this is coming into play with these cryptocurrencies, because and I was telling you this before, when they first brought in Bitcoin, and I looked at how it was manufactured. It's manufactured through the processor completing a certain equation, and each time it completes that equation, the equation gets harder to solve, basically, and so it takes more processor speed. And in those early days, you could take a old desktop that you had maybe sitting out in the garage, plug it in, and start mining Bitcoin, and mine them pretty quickly. But it soon got to a point where now today you have people who in their basement have a whole rack of servers just to sit there and mine Bitcoin. And so I wondered at that time when we would start to see whether it was botnets or whether it was some other type of malware getting on people's computers to mine these cryptocurrencies, because we have, especially here in the United States, we have a ton of people that are gamers who have these, you know, upper end, top of the line, some laptops that have a ton of processor speed, probably more than they're using. And if you get an implant on that machine, then you can sit there and mine that currency and have it sent back to your own personal account. I saw a report, and I think this was maybe a couple of years ago, talking about the amount of botnets that are on people's machines that they don't even know about. And I can't remember exactly what the percentage in the United States was, but it was an astronomical figure. And the thing is, they get on the machines and they just sit there. And that's one of the ways that some of these hackers or these activist groups do their denial of service attacks. Is there's people out there on the dark web and on hacker forums and stuff like that. They're not just selling your credit card information. They're taking and they're putting these botnets on people's machines, and they're just sitting there, and then they sell access to your machine. And, you know, it could happen at 2 in the morning, somebody buys access to your machine, and they start a denial of service attack using your processor speed because you didn't shut down your computer, and likely you didn't secure your home network, because I don't think, you know, most people in America give much thought to securing their network. They simply take, you know, the box from whatever internet service provider they have, the all-in-one router or whatever, they plug it in and they go. And they never think to add layers of security to that. So I think in addition, possibly NSA coming out, even if it's a behind-closed-door meeting with some of these software producers and definitely operating system producers, but having a meeting with them, explaining to them the things that they have found and how to make their systems better, I think that we also need to start educating people on how to better safeguard their networks and possibly, you know, do that as an initiative through these internet service providers, because definitely it's to their detriment also whenever you have a botnet, you know, network going off going across their lines. It's going to slow down traffic. Maybe that's a possible solution.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. ReadyMade Resources has a limited number of PVS-30 night vision scopes for $4,700. These are the top-of-the-line night vision scopes used by the U.S. military, which normally sell for over $11,000. Turn your 12-hour rifle into a 24-hour rifle. Visit ReadyMade Resources to get your PVS-30 today. I think that people do have to take some responsibility for their own security, but, you know, it's just, you know, you mentioned that the government's slow, and part of it could be that it's mostly ran by older folks, and older folks just don't have the, you know, they just didn't have the exposure to computers growing up. You know, it's a relatively new thing, the internet, and everything's moving so fast, and it's more than most people's ability to get on that learning curve. It's something that you have to be studying all the time to really have the knowledge of even what the risks are with it. And I think that that's something that a lot of folks don't know. And I think it would be great if there was some type of an education system for that. And I'm sure that we could probably learn a lot off of YouTube. But one of the things I'd like to ask you is, do you worry that the U.S. banking system could be at risk? I mean, could we potentially have some type of a worm or a virus that gets into the banking system computers and it just hides there and it waits for the systems to get backed up at the end of the night, and then it goes into the backup servers, and then everything activates all at once and it erases all of the data in the backup servers, as well as all of the data in the servers? I mean, is that something that could actually happen, to where we could just wake up one morning and the M2 money supply is zero because all checking and savings accounts and CDs and everything's been completely wiped clean, and it's not anybody that's looking to have a ransomware or mine Moneros or anything like that. It's just it's maybe a terrorist organization or a malicious state actor that's just decided that they want to cause chaos. And what would that do to America if we woke up and all the money was gone one morning?
Well, definitely that is a thought that keeps me up at night. As I have, because I have to admit, I went many, many years without knowing that much about cybersecurity and networks and stuff like that, and I'm still kind of a novice at it. I'm not any kind of expert, but it is something that, that definitely worries me, especially as these networks and more people with knowledge begin to experiment and exploit these things. What turns out, you know, what begins as a teenager who's playing a video game online, you know, goes to a hacker forum to learn how to get some kind of advantage in the game, and suddenly he gets introduced to some people that are like, hey, we can also do this and we can do that. It suddenly turns into something far grander than just simply, you know, getting some extra gold or something in a game. Another thing that, that I have been talking about with some of my friends is that if I was, say, Kim Jong-un in North Korea, why would I spend all the time, effort, and money to try to acquire nuclear weapons when I could put a few very intelligent people in a you know, a basement somewhere with some processing power and have them develop exploits to achieve the same effect without ever firing a weapon and without the target country ever knowing where it came from. It's not just the financial system that worries me. It's all of our critical infrastructure. If you think about it, if these guys can get into the financial system and wreak havoc, they could definitely get into our transportation system and wreak havoc. They could even do things. I mean, we had the OPM hack not that long ago where thousands of our military and civilian government employees had their information stolen. That right there gives, and it wasn't just information, you know, like their name, address, social security number. In many, many cases, this was information that was in their background investigations for high-level security clearances. With that being the case, that points a potential adversary who got that information in the direction of people to possibly recruit, expose, or even take out. Another use for cyber warfare is just simply causing chaos within a government. So let's say, and this is completely hypothetical, but let's say that we were looking at going to war with a rogue nation with a, you know, the standard paranoid dictator at its helm, and let's say that he has been developing nuclear technology. If you were able to get into, say, his lead scientist's computer, simply go into his email inbox, send a controversial email to his dear leader, and then delete the sent email from his inbox that he doesn't even know that it's been sent, and suddenly at 3 o'clock in the morning, this guy gets a knock on the door from the security service. Shot. In fact, you not only cost that man his life, halted their nuclear program. And the same thing could be done here. Evidence could be manufactured. You know, there's been a lot of claims over the years of people having evidence that was manufactured on their computers that did them in. Whether it be child porn or whatever the case might be, and definitely you don't know the truth. I mean, I don't, you know, none of us know the truth, but those have been claims that have been out there, and that stuff that could be done through this cyber capability. But as you were saying, probably the most dangerous thing that they could do, financial system, you know, let's say we woke up tomorrow, all of the bank information was wiped out. That includes not just your money that is in there, which, you know, as soon as you put your money in the bank, it becomes ones and zeros. And that's if you even put physical money into the bank. So many people just have direct deposit for their paychecks nowadays. So it wipes out your bank account. It wipes out your history of your mortgage payments. It even wipes out who owns your mortgage. It wipes out the stock market. All of that would lead to a situation very quickly where a potential adversary, without ever firing a shot, without ever putting their military in danger, could topple this nation, and the people themselves would topple the nation, because very shortly you would have riots in the streets, you'd have looting, widespread violence, and people would be calling for foreign troops to come in. And so you would, in effect, be able to take over this country without firing a shot. And that worries me, especially, like I was saying, with Microsoft giving the source code. And I realize that much of our critical infrastructure, the networks, the servers, all of that, it doesn't run off Microsoft products. A lot of it is run off of Linux, which is much more secure, and there's not as many viruses and malware that is developed for it. But at the same time, we do still have, like I was saying earlier, we still have the same quote-unquote lazy IT professionals in charge of this. Get a grasp on this. We're basically a sitting duck, Mark.
That's the end of the first half of my interview with Sergeant Tim of Outlaw Patriot News. Tune in next week for the rest of the show.
In the Days of Elijah, Book 2, Wormwood, by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. Everett and Courtney Carl have survived the Seven Seal Judgments, which devastated the planet. But have their efforts to stay alive been in vain? The next series of judgments to fall upon the earth are known as the Seven Trumpets. Within this series of cataclysms is the earth's collision with a giant asteroid known as Wormwood. The comet will poison much of the planet's fresh water supplies, making survival nearly impossible. With each subsequent trumpet judgment, their odds of living grow slimmer. If Everett and Courtney are to survive, they'll need perseverance, faith, and a great outpouring of providence from the Almighty. Buy your copy of The Days of Elijah, Book 2, Wormwood, in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition from Amazon.com today.